to KGNU's Morning Magazine for Wednesday, April 12th of 2023. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Coming up on today's program, as the winter warms, bears are coming out of hibernation. We'll hear about attempts to carry out a bear census. The tax filing deadline is approaching, and your returns may look a bit different than they did last year. We'll hear why. Chris Moore will have his weekly commentary, Make Them Hear You, and then herbalist Brigitte Mars will bring us her regular Wednesday feature, Naturally. A commentary from Jim Hightower is at the bottom of the hour. Then comes a public affair. Today, we'll host a panel of Colorado-based reproductive rights experts to parse through the dual rulings on mifepristone issued on Friday. We'll also be taking your questions live on the air. Then at 9:30, Greg Schultz will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still ahead, but first, a look at the headlines with KGNU's Alyssa Palazzo.
The federal government is floating a set of three proposals to prevent the Colorado River from drying up as it moves through drought-stricken Arizona, Nevada, and California.
The first of the three options is for the Bureau of Reclamation to take no additional action, and the river's conditions would likely continue to diminish. The second option, federal officials would decide in coming weeks if they plan to impose water cuts based on the system of water rights seniority, known as prior appropriation. This proposal would deeply affect newer and fast-growing cities in Arizona. The third option makes broad cuts affecting the California parts of the river, which in recent years has held up negotiations. The proposals follow a multi-decade drought affecting the country's largest reservoirs, Lake Mead and Lake Powell. Federal officials are accepting public comments for a 45-day period, which started yesterday. Governor Jared Polis has moved to weaken legislation intended to make filing lawsuits against the gun industry easier in Colorado. The Colorado Sun reports that the governor's office met with an ad hoc committee of legislators last week to remove provisions intended to prevent children and criminals from obtaining weapons via gun retailers and, quote, implement reasonable controls when buyers intend to hurt themselves or others. These measures were a part of the Senate Bill 168 proposed by Democrats earlier this year. Supporters of the original bill continue to support the amended version while expressing disappointment that it doesn't go as far as the original. Three additional bills affecting gun laws are pending the governor's approval. The Colorado House of Representatives voted to pass a bill yesterday aimed at strengthening healthcare services for communities statewide. This bill aims to direct hospitals' community benefits spending towards underprivileged communities by implementing community feedback and restricting the amount of out-of-state spending that qualifies as community benefit, despite being beyond Colorado's borders. The legislation would require the Department of Healthcare Policy and Financing to hold weekly stakeholder meetings to ensure fair representation is in the spending plan.
Boulder County Representative Judy Amabile sponsored the bill, which passed out of the House yesterday by a vote of 48-13.
The city of Boulder has launched a new program called Building Home to help newly housed community members transition into and maintain stable housing. The new program will work with Permanent Supportive Housing, or PSH, which supports people currently experiencing homelessness. Building Home will match someone newly housed to someone who has been in the PSH for under 2 years. Megan Newton, the policy advisor for Housing and Human Services, said in a city press release that the effort supports, quote, an essential safety net that has been shown to increase the success of newly housed community members remaining in housing. The services intend to build a sense of community, help with housing retention, reduce feelings of isolation, and teach life skills to the participants. The Colorado Department of Human Services is encouraging eligible Colorado residents to apply for the state's Low Income Energy Assistance Program, or LEAP. Eligible households can get support covering winter home heating bills. The program sends a one-time payment directly to the household utility provider. The average benefit is around $441.
Teresa Cullen, manager of the LEAP program, says the recent reduction in SNAP benefits and the cost of heating up more than 35% over the last 2 winters, the choice between heating or eating is real for too many in our communities. Coloradans earning less than 60% of the state's median income may be eligible. The deadline to apply for LEAP assistance is May 1st. Boulder, Denver, and Longmont are looking at another sunny day with highs in the low 80s and a little wind. Tonight, it will cool off to a breezy low of around 50 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Alyssa Palazzo.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm Shannon Young. Warming temperatures mean bears are coming out of hibernation. In Utah, wildlife biologists are visiting bear dens and using GPS collars to gauge how many animals are in the state. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, KZMU's Emily Arnson has more.
Every spring, the Division of Wildlife Resources tries to estimate the state's black bear population so they know how many permits to sell during the hunting season. They want to know how many cubs are born each winter. To do this, DWR biologists track females with GPS collars and then visit their dens at the end of hibernation season to check for cubs. This year probably won't see a boom in Utah's bear population. Wildlife biologist Brad Crompton.
Kind of got to think last summer, which started off mighty dry. And we've had severe drought for nearly a decade. So it could be a bit down based on last year. Next year this time, you'd anticipate a pretty good pulse in production.
Right now, we're in the foothills of the Book Cliffs near Cisco. We're about to visit the den of a 13-year-old bear that Crompton has been tracking since she was a cub.
And she's done well and stayed in this Nashwash area of the Book Cliffs for most of her life. She did have a really weird and random movement this fall. Just out of nowhere, she decided to leave the Book Cliffs and go to Colorado. It was kind of this 100-mile voyage across the desert and spent a month out there, then just came right back.
Is that for food, or why do you suppose that is?
I don't know. Maybe it's just, you know, just to look around to see if there's a greener pasture somewhere else.
Crompton has been crawling into bear dens for over a decade. Once he's in there, he tranquilizes the female so he can check for cubs and change the batteries on her GPS collar.
Has a tranquilizer ever not worked?
Yeah, often, actually. Yeah.
What?
Just, you know, the nature of their metabolism right now is they're not metabolizing things rather very quickly.
Have the bears ever been aggressive when you've gotten to their dens?
They're scared, it appears. And they're defensive sort of stuff, but never, I wouldn't say aggressive.
The DWR keeps tabs on about 30 females every spring. Based on the data they collect from these bears, they can make an estimate about the larger population. Sometimes finding the den is the hardest part of the job, especially this year with the heavy snowfall. Even though Crompton had the bear's GPS coordinates, it's not like he knew the best way to get there.
Watch out, rock.
Crompton and his partner, wildlife biologist Joe Christensen, scrambled around in the snow to scout out a good path to get to the den. And while they were doing that, I stayed back with the rest of the group, which consisted of curious friends of the biologists, including one couple who brought their 4-month-old baby. Once the biologists scouted the path, we hiked about a mile up a pretty steep ravine.
How are we going to get down?
We tried 3 different ways. They were all bad.
Oh, God.
We all started whispering once we got to the bear den so we wouldn't disturb the bear, although I'm not sure how effective that was.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, the bear's gonna hear the baby. Wow. Do you think she's heard us?
Hopefully not.
Okay.
After shoveling away the snow from the door of the den, Crompton crawled in face first to take a peek.
Hey, bear. Calm down. All right, sweetie? Wide awake.
After he tranquilized her, Crompton and Christensen got her out of the den and changed her collar. She didn't have any cubs, which most likely means she hadn't eaten enough before the winter started. If a female bear doesn't already have cubs, she will usually mate in the summer. But the cubs won't always develop if the female doesn't have enough body fat. The DWR says it's still too soon to gauge the black bear population this year. Biologists haven't been able to visit as many dens as they usually would by this time because the snow is just so deep. But they say they anticipate the population will be close to last year's at around 5,200 adults.
That story from Emily Arnson at KZMU in Moab was shared with us via Rocky Mountain Community Radio, a network of public media stations in Colorado, Wyoming, Utah, and New Mexico, including KGNU. Also, with the spring comes tax season. If you haven't already completed your paperwork, you may find a few surprises this year, as pandemic expansions to certain tax credits have expired. There are also the state-specific tax questions Coloradans deal with each year, and some of them were affected by ballot questions in last November's election. KGNU's Alexis Kenyon spoke with Kathy White, executive director of the Colorado Fiscal Institute, to talk taxes.
To start, let's get to the Tabor refund. Colorado state legislators have until May 8th to decide how to distribute about $2.7 billion in Tabor refunds. Last year, the legislatures and Governor Polis decided to distribute that money with a flat rate. So individual filers got $750 rebate and joint tax filers got $1,500. What are we looking at this year?
Right now, without any changes to law, current rules basically says that the more money you make, the bigger your Tabor rebate should be. Last year, the legislature changed that rule, but for 1 year only. Last year, they sent back an identical rebate to every taxpayer, regardless of how much money they made, because lots of people were still struggling to recover from the pandemic. And it wasn't people who make over $250,000. And so the legislature last year took that historic rebate amount and just sent it back in an equal amount to every taxpayer, regardless of how much money they earn. But that was only valid for a single year. Right now, without any changes to law, we have what's called this six-tier sales tax rebate mechanism. So it's a very antiquated and complicated formula put in place in the late 1990s. But the way that it actually works out in practice is the more you make, the bigger your rebate. This is the primary method that we have of returning excess revenue to taxpayers. But again, there are lots of other things that the legislature is considering and lots of other ways that the revenue can go back to taxpayers that isn't in that mechanism.
So Coloradans passed Prop 121 in November. It was a tax cut, which seemed pretty minor. It took Colorado's tax rate down 0.15%. How is that affecting Tabor refunds and taxes this year?
Right. So Proposition 121 was an income tax rate cut. And as all across-the-board tax rate cuts do, 121 definitely benefits wealthy more than average working people. So it took the income tax rate down to 4.4%, which means that it's basically money that's coming out of what would have been returned to taxpayers via a Tabor rebate mechanism. And because that tax rate disproportionately benefits high-income taxpayers, it actually means that many low- and middle-income Coloradans are going to pay more in taxes because their Tabor rebate basically went to a lot of wealthy people. So that is going to be the case this year unless the legislature does something to tip the scales back. People at the bottom end of the spectrum who earn $50,000 and below are likely paying more this year in income tax because their rebate has been reduced because of the tax rate cut.
What should people be aware of as they fill out their taxes this year and as this May 8th deadline approaches?
Right. Colorado did pass recently state child tax credit. So they should make sure that if they're eligible, they get their state child tax credit. We also passed the earned income tax credit. So we have a state-based earned income tax credit. And they should definitely get that. There are property tax relief proposals. There's a number of tax credit bills, again, that are moving through the process that, again, will reduce overall revenue. So it will shrink the size of the amount that needs to go back through this Tabor rebate mechanism. There are things from easy tax credits to a whole housing, a whole variety of things in a lot of different areas. And so till May 8th, the legislature has the power to do a lot of things. They have power to set how the rebates go back. Right now, under consideration, there's a whole variety of things that send the rebate back in other ways. And there has been talk in this legislative session of making that flat or identical rebate so that whatever's left, whether it's $100 million or $500 million or whatever it is, that everybody gets a flat amount and rich people don't get more than their fair share again.
During the pandemic, the federal government spent a historic amount of money on social welfare and safety net programs, many of which have ended this year. Do you think, you know, moving forward, that these policies will have made any impact on, you know, the way state lawmakers and Colorado lawmakers are thinking about tax codes?
I do feel like we learned a lot about where we have gaps in an economic downturn, things like unemployment insurance and tax policies, that we need health care in order to work, that we need child care in order for parents to go to work. And if they don't have child care, they just can't work. So I think we learned a lot of really important lessons during the pandemic. And we are, at least in Colorado, I think starting to try to fill some of those holes and address some of those gaps. But memory is short. And so as the economy continues to improve, now is really the time to start filling those holes and those gaps so that we prepare for the next downturn. But I'd give us maybe a C on that. You know, we're efforting, but I don't right yet see a lot of maybe a B minus. So,
well, I guess we will see. It will be interesting to watch.
Yeah. And there are many, many states that have not done even the great things, some of the good things that Colorado has done to improve unemployment insurance. There's another bill that would do that going through the legislature right now. And the federal government has yet to act to do things like putting the expansions of the child tax credit back into place. So I'm not holding my breath on that.
Kathy White is the executive director of Colorado Fiscal Institute. Kathy, thanks so much for talking with us.
Well, thank you, Alexis.
For KGNU, I'm Alexis Kenyon.
We go now to Chris Moore's weekly commentary, Make Them Hear You.
Make them hear you. Make them hear you.
This is Make Them Hear You with ideas on how you can have your voice heard before Congress. Last March 14th, a voluntary code of ethics was placed on the Supreme Court by the Judicial Conference of the United States. There are no enforcement provisions in it, and even the censures and toothless reprimands sometimes meted out to lower court judges aren't there. The Supreme Court has never released its own code of ethics, if indeed it has one at all. Now that it's been revealed that Justice Clarence Thomas has received millions of dollars worth of vacations from his billionaire buddy to hobnob with many of the leaders of the far right, and even though Thomas promises to abide by the new code of ethics from March 14th forward, trust in the nation's highest court has plummeted to an even greater low. Every year since 2011, the Supreme Court Ethics Recusal and Transparency Act is submitted to both the House and the Senate, and every year it fails. But it's back. As of February 23rd of this year, it requires justices of the Supreme Court to adopt and follow a code of ethics, places transparency standards on gifts and travel, codifies recusal standards, and requires the court to disclose lobbying and dark money interests before it. Representative Henry Johnson explained, "Recent events have made it disturbingly clear that without explicit enforceable rules, certain members of the High Court are going to keep trying to get away with more and more until they have gotten away with our whole republic. That's why it's more important than ever that Congress acts." The Supreme Court Ethics Recusal and Transparency, SCERT Act, is a good start. The Supreme Court Ethics Act would create a statutory requirement for the Judicial Conference of the United States to issue a code of conduct, direct the Supreme Court to appoint an Ethics Investigations Council who will establish a process for the public to report information about potentially unethical conduct by the justices, empowered the Ethics Investigation Council to conduct their own investigations into potential violations of the Code of Conduct, require justices who recuse themselves from a case to publicly disclose the reason, require the court to disclose lobbying and dark money interests before it, and require justices who deny a proper motion to recuse to publicly disclose the reason. Many Republicans oppose the measure. As Jim Jordan said, quote, Democrats are trying to move legislation that burdens the Supreme Court with layers of bureaucracy. This isn't about ethics. This is an insurance policy for them when things don't go their way. They want to have the tools at their disposal to make life hard for the justices, close quote. And Representative Mike Johnson complained that, quote, Democrats want to usurp judicial independence and intimidate the conservative majority on abortion and other points of the radical progressive agenda. If you have thoughts on the Supreme Court Ethics Recusal and Transparency Act of 2023, you can contact your senators and representative. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
It's now time to check in with herbalist Brigitte Mars, who brings us her weekly episode of Naturally.
Greetings. Thank you for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally. I want to share some words of wisdom about a tradition of herbalism that I learned from Susan Weed called the Wise Woman Tradition. And this is something that could be used for men and women. So first of all, when we have an illness, this is not the time to be blaming anybody else. Of course, I know things happen, but we are going to do a lot better if we look at what can we do to take care of our health. So it might also be wise to look at what was going on in my life when this illness started. And we might take this illness as really an opportunity to do something different. So when we're sick, we might ask questions like, what is this trying to tell me? How can this be my ally? What does this prevent me from having to do? So I was at a party the other day and I heard a man say, I've got high blood pressure, but my doctor's going to get it down for me. And I thought, don't you think you should be trying to get it down? So we have so many options. And this is not to diss the wonderful medical help that we have in our time and our present situation. But let's just say when we have an illness, we might start out with, is there anything energetically I could do better? Like get more sleep, or clean my house, or meditate, or do yoga, or decrease stress. So let's start with some of those outside things. And then we can look at our diet. Before we do anything else, is there a way we could eat healthier? Maybe back off of caffeine, alcohol, sugar, fried foods, chips, things like that. And what could we eat that is going to make us healthier? And then we've got herbs. There's so many herbs. There's herbs for everything, all right? So maybe try an herbal remedy. And then maybe there's some vitamins we could do. Vitamins you can get without a prescription. I know when I first started working retail, I thought, oh my God, I'm getting varicose veins. I just took vitamin E and they went away and they never came back. And then we have drugs. And then we have surgery. But to start out with drugs and surgery kind of misses the point because there might be so many other things we can do that really are going to build our health and build our strength. So you can work with your healthcare practitioner, but I would really encourage all of us to take charge and be somewhat responsible and see what we can do. And then if you do end up having drugs and surgery, it'll work even better and you'll come through it a lot quicker and better off. So food for thought. What can you do to improve your health? Very often, those little illnesses are an opportunity to wake up. Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
That's it for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host and producer, Shannon Young. Special thanks to Alyssa Palazzo, Alexis Kenyon, Emily Arnson, Chris Moore, and Brigitte Mars for their contributions to today's program. If you'd like to comment on something you heard on KGNU, you can leave us a voicemail at 303-447-9911. Stay tuned for a special call-in edition of A Public Affair with a panel of reproductive rights experts. That's coming up after the latest commentary from Jim Hightower. But first, the headlines from the BBC.